You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.
All right. Welcome to the Berkeley Local Podcast. Episode 3, we're kicking off the year of 2020 with two great guests here. So the Berkeley Local Podcast is a podcast spotlighting businesses in the Berkeley community. And on this monthly podcast, we're bringing on a couple guests each month, and we're going to interview them. We're going to hear about their stories. And today, kicking off 2020, we got two great guests that are going to do a little intro, and we're going to jump right into the show with that. So, Andy, why don't you kind of introduce yourself and tell us about your business in 60 seconds or less?
Hey, Steve. Andy Gilbert with Berkeley Eyewear. We opened up about 10 years ago on Coolidge Highway in downtown Berkeley.
Well, that's a really fast intro. Okay. Thank you. And Jeff, why don't you give me a little overview of your business in 60 seconds or less?
Well, I'm Jeffrey Milstein. I run the Atomic Dog, which is across the street from Berkeley Eyewear. We've been in business since June 2012, and we have gourmet hot dogs and the best hamburgers in Berkeley. Grilled cheese. We're just a family restaurant with a bar.
A family restaurant with a bar. What could be more family than saying a family restaurant with a bar?
Yeah, the kids get milkshakes. Parents get margaritas.
Right? You can't beat that.
No way.
Well, those are two great intros. So that's easy. Right? You can figure those two out pretty fast. And coincidentally, you're right next to each other here in beautiful Berkeley on Coolidge Avenue.
And in the studio.
And in the studio, too. Yeah. Very good. Right? So
you got joke.
And we got lots of jokes, and we're just getting rolling. So, Andy, why don't you tell me kind of what got you guys started with Berkeley Eyewear? What got you up to kind of where you are now?
My wife's been doing optical for about 40 years. She's been a buyer. She's been an optician. She's worked for ophthalmologist. So she's been doing it for a real long time, and as she was getting seasoned in the industry, you know, she was starting to kind of top out in her pay, and she wasn't loving where she was at. So when you don't love where you're at, you got to change. And Berkeley Eyewear was, you know, born from that.
And when did you get involved in it?
Oh, I've always been involved. I've always been back room. I had a 20 plus year career in the mortgage industry. The last 10 years kind of sharing it with Berkeley Eyewear. I kind of retired from the mortgage industry about 5 years ago and went full time because Berkeley Eyewear was demanding a lot from us.
So what made you guys pick Berkeley?
At the time, we were living in Huntington Woods, and we drove down Coolidge a lot, and Coolidge wasn't looking real lively at the time. And honestly, it was seeing a for sale sign in one of the building's windows, one of those little for sale signs that you buy at Home Depot, you know, the orange ones, and just tiny one, and all the windows were blacked out. And we called the phone number, and the guy hung up on me.
And, well, that's a great way to start.
Well, yeah. I called back again and said, you know, I'm calling about this building, you know, that you've got. And it turns out, long story short, the guy lived around the corner and was more than happy to sell us the building. And really, that's where it came because, you know, we just needed to, you know, do something a little bit different. Lisa needed to change her job up, and she's kind of gotten into her own there at Berkeley Eyewear. She's killing it.
She's killing it. She's killing it. Right? So, Jeff, speaking of killing it.
Where is this going?
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't have a good lead in on that, did I? So tell me a bit more about Atomic Dog and kind of the preface of why the owner kind of came into starting there and then how you got there.
So I'll start with how I got there first.
Okay.
I was kind of just doing my own thing back in 2016, 2017, trying to figure out myself. And I got really –
trying to find yourself?
Yeah, basically. And I got really lucky. I've known the owner since I've been a child. My aunt went to high school with him. He's a pretty big-time music producer in the Metro Detroit area. And she got me in touch with him. I started working for him at his studio. And then he told me he has a restaurant and he would like me to work at it. And I did. And just things kept going well.
Did you start as a manager? Did you start in a different role?
I just started as going in there for a couple hours a day, trying to get the lay of the land down, see how everything went. And just one day he goes, I'm going to make you manager. And I said, okay, sure.
Had you worked in management before in the restaurant industry?
I've worked.
So all new.
I was a server growing up for like 5 years at a restaurant chain that I will not
name. We'll leave it nameless.
But it's Australian, but it's not Australian. So,
boy, that's pretty easy to figure that out. Okay.
Yeah, Chili's.
Yeah, so, right? I was going to say TGI Fridays, but okay.
TGI Fridays.
Oh, there we go. Perfect.
Yeah. Honestly, I didn't want to go back into the restaurant business. It's so demanding. But this place is different. This place is very –
So tell me how it's different.
It's very family-friendly oriented. It's really laid back. Restaurants are all about corporate. Like they – I don't know where I'm going with this, Steve. But we're just a really laid back
– Tell me about the name.
The Atomic Dog.
So the name comes obviously from a George Clinton song.
You've been doing your homework?
I did. You know, I have YouTube and I think I did a search about Atomic Dog and I read a couple old articles that talk about the music career of the founder. And I was like, whoa, boom, video pops up of George Clinton's famous song. And then I read a different article that really stated that's where he pulled the name in from, was his industry experience and that.
I can't really go much further into that due to me signing an NDA, but yeah, that's where the name came from.
It's an awesome name. It was one of the first businesses I noticed when I moved to Berkeley about 4 years ago. And I've been in multiple times, had great experiences with your staff and obviously great food.
Our food speaks for itself. Our food is so
real good food.
What's your favorite there, Andy? You must go there on a somewhat regular basis?
Every day.
I'm not going to have to make you say it how that is, but what do you have a favorite item you get when you go in there?
You know, their hamburgers are unbeatable. And I don't care if it's just the plain hamburger or, you know, that, the Atomic Blue.
Yeah, with the blue cheese and the onion ring.
The hamburger itself, I mean, I could eat it just alone. It's good taste, good flavor. Their mixture, their grind between, you know, fat and beef is good. And I love it.
Where are you pulling the meat from it?
That's a question for another episode.
Ooh, okay.
No,
part of that NDA.
Is that part of the NDA? I'm sure I could figure it out, but
I go to Eastern Market weekly.
Yeah, I thought you guys did.
Yep. I get the real deal from a guy named Fat Mikey.
Oh, that's a great name.
Yep.
Right?
So we get our meat there. We get it ready for the week and serve it as fresh as we can.
So for a place with Atomic Dog in the name, and then the first thing you said was the burgers are awesome. I have to admit, I haven't had a burger yet. I've had dogs every time I've been in there. The Hula Dog, because I love pineapple, is probably my favorite, but everything I've had has really been good. Let's talk about the chips.
Our slips. So
the slips. Yeah, I said chips, but I did that.
Slips, chips,
potato,
potato.
Right? Slips. Chicago Slips. Isn't that the name?
Yeah, that's the name. So we I believe it was our
– wish I had some right now.
I would have brought you some.
Episode 2.
The Chicago
Slip part episode. 2 of this. Definitely.
So we just decided French fries were everybody does French fries. Let's do something a little bit different but keep it in the same ballpark as the French fries due to the potato family. But our Chicago Slips, we get potatoes. I get these big, nice Idaho russet potatoes and we cut them in-house. We have a little secret recipe that we soak them in, and then we fry them in corn oil.
Is that something that Chicago's known for?
I have no idea.
I don't think it is.
I
lived in Chicago for 10 years, and I had lots of hot dogs in Chicago, obviously. But I don't remember having slips. Maybe I'm just – I don't know. Maybe I just wasn't paying attention in my 10 years there. But I love the name, and I love the product. You guys are doing a real good job with that. It's a good add-on.
Burgers have taken off more than we could ever imagine.
Really?
We just started – burgers maybe 2 years ago, and a half ago. We've always had burgers, correct? Because yes. You've known about this place longer than I have, and I run it. But
I think there's been burgers on the menu from the beginning. If I think back, I think I ordered hot dogs in the beginning as well. Mm-hmm. But I'm a sucker for a good burger. And
well, I am too. So now I got to make sure I make that happen in the next week here for sure.
I remember the first time I actually went in there with the owner. He sat me down. He goes, get whatever you want. I got the Gouda bacon burger. And that moment, I was hooked.
Gouda bacon. That
I'm not a big
awesome.
Mustard fan either. But that mustard, the spinach, the bacon, the beef is just all complementing each other to get the fullest flavor potential out there. And it was incredible.
I think the fun thing about Atomic Dog is the home they sit in.
Right. Yeah. Can you talk more about that building, Andy, since you've been in the area probably a little longer than Jeff here? It was a what was the business prior to this?
This I know, actually.
Oh, really okay. Well. I'm sorry, Jeff. All right.
Go for it.
So it was a farmhouse built in the 20s, 30s, 40s. And then it was the Berkeley Creamery in the 50s and 60s. And then it kind of sat vacant for a while. I believe it was some law offices in the 80s and 90s.
Accounting office.
Accounting.
Yeah. Okay.
And then our fearless leader bought it. I want to say June 2011 and turned it into what it is now.
He did a nice –
what a great reuse of something that
– He didn't just rip it apart. You know, he really tried to save, you know, the old stuff if it was savable. And if it wasn't, you know, try to replace it, you know, with something kind of looking. So their eclectic look inside I think kind of really goes along with their flavor and taste.
That's part of the – it's not a chain restaurant.
Yeah.
Right? One of the other great things about living in Berkeley is we have a lot of businesses like that. Right. And I think when you walk by it or drive by it, you don't automatically pick up on that till you walk in there and then you see that and you're like, oh, wow, this isn't totally what I thought it was going to be. Cool.
If I had a nickel for every time somebody's walked in there and said, oh, I didn't know you had more rooms in the back.
Right.
I'd be
making
money in a weird way. But I would also have a lot of nickels. So
Andy, did you was your building what was your building prior to you guys buying it then?
In the most recent, you know, years, it was prior to, you know, the eyewear store, it was a bookstore.
Okay. I remember those.
Yeah. Right. there was a bakery, like a 2-day-old, 3-day-old, you know, kind of bakery, you know, discount shop there for years. And I think that is like the 70s.
Okay.
And other than that, I don't know what it was.
But in 2010, you guys came in there and changed the world over, right?
Well, originally, that Berkeley Eyewear started in 2010, and it was in a smaller building down the street a couple doors.
Okay.
Then we went about 5 years after that, after we opened, up a sunglass store called Local Sunglass Company. It was really because the original store was so small that and we had such a large selection of regular glasses, and then the sunglass selection was growing, that we were just kind of stacking things on top of each other. So we had an idea to kind of throw, you know, the sunglasses out on their own, and Local Sunglass Company opened up down there in 2004.
Is that your own creation, Local Sunglass Company, or is that part of a
– No, that's our creation.
That's your creation. Okay. Yeah.
We merged the two stores together years later. But the stores in between the two stores used to laugh at us because we would walk customers back and forth between the two stores, meaning if you came in to buy regular glasses and then you decided you wanted a pair of sunglasses, they had to walk you down to the store. But we learned fast on. We didn't have people walk down by themselves. If it was raining, somebody would walk with them with an umbrella.
Oh, my gosh.
And we had them escorted. But
that's customer service.
Camelot cleaners, the ladies in at the counter would laugh at us as we'd walk by, you know, all the time during the day. But after years of doing that, and we decided to, you know, to merge the two together because the Local Sunglass is 13 plus 100 square feet. The other store was, you know, 650. So
That makes a lot of sense. So really, when you walk in your store now, so I'm a new customer, I walk in And is it the idea, is it kind of eyewear to one side, sunglasses to the other, and then toward the back you could do the eye exams? Is that the premise of how you kind of have it laid out?
Well, the premise is the eye exams are done towards the rear of the building, sure. But when you walk in, there really is no visual strategy to where sunglasses are. We've got it by brand. We've got it by design. My wife is very conscious of how she markets and designs, you know, the layout of the eyewear. But you'll see some of the sunglasses, you know, grouped together, like Ray-Ban. You know, it's, you know, grouped together, but some of the other ones are kind of spread out and all over. But we've got close to 1,000 pieces.
1,000 pieces.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. We teeter.
That's a huge variety.
Yeah. We teeter between, you know, on the low 850 to, you know, a little over 1,000 pieces, you know, at any given time.
So at what point did you decide that you needed to add the eye exam aspect to it? I think when you and I first met, we talked a little bit about this, and I think that wasn't really the original business plan, correct?
Well, when Berkeley Eyewear opened up, you know, in 2010, my wife was looking to sell eyewear, work with you on the fashion side of it. She loved, you know, the eyewear, the hardware, if you will, side of the business, and, you know, less love for, you know, the eye exams. And, she saw that we had to eventually do that. The original business plan had it in there as a model. It just, we didn't want to pull that trigger until it was the right time. And, you know, after, you know, being open 8 years, we had a pretty thick clientele list, and it was easy at that point to reach out to them and say, you know, you loved us for, you know, buying your eyewear. How about coming, you know, and seeing our doctors? And we have two really great doctors.
Has that helped your business then, you feel?
Oh,
by
yeah.
doing that?
Yeah.
By bringing on the doctors in that way?
Yeah. Yeah. We can kind of do it full, you know, full service. You know, sometimes people were a little bit surprised, maybe even a little bit put off, you know, when you called up and said, you know, I want to make an appointment. You said, we didn't do eye exams, but you can buy your eyewear here. Well, I had one lady years ago say, well, that's silly. Well, it wasn't so silly because, you know, thousands of people did it.
Sure.
We just knew that eventually it was going to come down to that. You know, I'd like to retire one day, and I'd like to think that, you know, a doctor will come in and, you know, and make that happen for us.
Sure.
Not for a while.
But you hope they come in and write a big check, and then you can go down to Key West and live the Margaritaville life. Is that what you're saying?
Maybe I don't have to go as far as Key West. I can stop in, you know, Fort Lauderdale.
Oh, okay.
Hollywood Beach.
Yeah, okay. That's realistic.
Sure. I would stick with Key West, but that's me.
Is that you? Yeah, okay. So that's where you want to go once.
I mean, I'd rather go there than Fort Lauderdale.
Okay. Wow. We could have like a whole episode on this probably right away.
Oh, yeah.
So Jeff, tell me a little bit about the kind of business strategy side, or kind of how you guys are trying to have Atomic Dog look in the local market versus other restaurants.
Well, our liquor license has definitely played a big part in that.
So what was some reasoning of adding a liquor license into it? I'll admit, I know you have a liquor license. I haven't had a drink there because I've probably mainly done it from a lunch perspective. Was that to try to grow your dinner business?
Correct. We expanded our hours and added the liquor license. So we were only open for from 11 to 2.
Yeah, I think that was my challenge. The first couple of years, I've been in Berkeley a little over 4 years now. When I first came in, a lot of times I work from home and I don't always go out for lunch. And then my wife and I would go out and be like, oh, I want to go on an Atomic Dog sometime, but they're not open for dinner. And I think of the 6 times I've been in there, 5 of them now have been at the dinner time frame.
Good. That's the time to come.
Yeah.
We are venturing in music. We have shows now. We have a poetry event tomorrow night with M.L. Liebler. He's a very well-known Metro Detroit poet and a professor. We have a great musician.
Seems like it makes you more a better way to market yourself as a poet if you say you're a professor, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It makes you sound smarter.
Yeah, professor, poet. He's a garbage man poet.
Look, I'm a small business owner, and on the side, I've taught marketing. So I'd always say, like, when I'm running my beer tour business and I'm on a tour with drunk people, and they're like, what else do you do? I'm like, oh, I'm an adjunct professor of marketing. And then they look at you totally different when you say it that way. So, okay, so you guys have a poet coming in and you're doing some music.
Yeah, it's like poetry night. I believe this time is I'll look it up as I'm talking.
You can have your assistant look it up as you're on live on air.
Siri.
Right? I'm not going to ask Siri because I don't – you know, her and I aren't friends right now. So just – anyway, we are having a great night tomorrow night. It is – I forgot to tell you. That's the theme. So they're going to just – I'm not sure where to go from that, but it's hosted by Shelly Lyons Mack.
Okay.
And it's anybody who wants to come up there and talk, they can. We do open mic nights. So if you have play, if you play an instrument.
So this is relatively new that you guys have?
We started this in, I want to say, September or November.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Very recent then. Very cool.
Yeah. And it's great business for us. And we stay open later.
So how late do you guys stay open when you're doing that?
This will be from 7 p.m. until 9 p.m. So okay. We'll be open tomorrow from 11 to 2. And then we take a little break. Remember, there's only 6 employees who work at the Atomic Dog. And then we'll reopen from 5 until 9 or 9:30. I mean, if people are still there having fun at 9:30, I'll stay open for a little bit.
So are you seeing people respond to that? Are they starting to come at night, starting to get a feel for it?
Yes. But every day is a mystery. You never know. Unfortunately, our location isn't the best for people who if you want to see a building – You're going to drive by it. You're not really looking for it. You're not going to see it. But people have been coming in the door more and more. We've been doing advertising.
So in what ways are you advertising?
Through Ferndale Friends. We've thrown a few ads in there with some coupons. I did a radio broadcast last year. I think the Chuck Bennett Show it was.
Okay.
And then we did something on Channel 4.
Over. Live in the – do you do Live in the
we
D?
We did do Live with Jason Carr, I believe.
Yeah, I've done Live in the D a couple times. I did an on-air beer and candy pairing back in – when was that? Like October?
You totally can, man.
Beer
and candy?
I had an Oktoberfest beer with peanut butter cups. So everybody's listening to this, go try that when Oktoberfest beers come around again. The maltiness of the Oktoberfest beer plays really well with the peanut butter taste and the chocolate taste of our Reese's peanut butter cup. So I actually did that live on air with Jason Carr and what's the not Tati, but the other one that does it, the blonde Kim. I think her name's Kim. Yeah, it was those two that day. And that was a lot of fun. That's a fun format. It's an interesting format because when you go on there, it's 10 to 11 a.m. So you go down to that studio in the city, don't you? And it's not like you're getting up at 5 in the morning to get to the studio to do like 5 minutes on air.
No, yeah, you got to go there. And like when we went there, I went with our chef, Gary. They brought this huge, huge mobile grill to us. It was
Oh, my goodness.
It was incredible. It's just unreal. I was watching the weather report live. Like 10 feet away from him. It's
a different experience as you're sitting in that green room there and you're kind of watching the stuff happen.
Mm-hmm.
And I was super nervous. That was the first time I did a live on TV type of appearance. I've done lots of like podcast shows and radio shows and I've had some pre-tape stuff. This is totally different though when you do it live and you see stuff that you're normally seeing on TV and you see it there.
That's because of the video camera.
Right? Yeah. See, I'm acting like I don't even see it. Like I'm just – it's so natural, right? You've ever had to do that, Andy? You've done some live on-air interviews before with your business?
A couple. Not too many, but, every time is a new experience with that, sure.
It is. You kind of never know. You never know what they're going to say. My thing always is if they get my business name right and my name right, I'm pretty content with that. I could give so many stories over the years of where it's like – today we're going to interview blah, blah, and his business, blah, blah, blah. And then they totally say the name wrong. I'm just like, oh, man. Like, did you read anything before you did this?
Are you in a position to correct them on air?
That's always what I wonder, right? Because it's like the first time they're going to hear you talk now on that interview. Like, do you say that? Like, you just said my name wrong, my business name wrong. Jennifer's kind of nodding her head like, you can. Okay. It's so rare that it gets done correctly that I'm excited when it does happen correctly. Well, I'm more surprised when it happens correctly. Like Live in the D, totally professional, was all
great
on
journalism.
Point. Yeah, you know.
That's all it is.
But when I'm on like Bob's Beer Show or something, I think was one I was on before, like who knows what they're going to say, you know. So, or like a local podcast show, like you never know what they're going to say on a local podcast show, right?
I know I've always walked away wondering, why didn't I say something different than what I said?
The best thing you should do is you should always listen to it again and go, okay, next time I do that, I'm going to try to sound like blank, right? And I got taped a lot of times. I listened to myself on video a lot of times or on recording a lot of times before I felt like I sounded a little more official and professional. And but you always have those good days and bad days.
Like it comes in waves, like nerve wracking. Like it's cool when you guys are talking and then you look at me and ask me a question. I'm like, oh no, all right.
Wait, what? In the room? Oh my gosh, what's going on?
This is about to happen in my mind.
Yeah, it's just always good practice. It's kind of the more you do it, the more it seems natural. It's maybe easy for me to say that since I work as a tour guide, but even tour guides, when you put a camera in front of us, they'll kind of sit there with the deer in the headlight look.
A beer tour guide.
Yeah. Well, usually the beer tour guide's drunk, so then he's a little more at ease. I remember one time I was at a beer festival in Grand Rapids in the dead of winter. It's the winter beer festival the Michigan Brewers Guild does every year. I was with a bunch of friends, and right at the end of this five-hour drink fest, I don't know how a camera got put in front of me, but it did, and they asked me some questions, and I walked away, and I go, oh, my gosh, I can't believe, like, why did I even start talking? Because I had to be very intoxicated at the time. And now I have this rule with friends. I call them handlers at that point at a beer festival. I'm like, if I ever get an opportunity like that again and we're more than 2 hours into the beer festival, just make me walk me away, right?
Because take your hand and
Yeah, just move you away, right? That's kind of the rule of thumb. Anything short of that, you're probably good to go.
I would probably let you talk and just laugh at it later.
Well, yeah, because that's what good friends do, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah, like my friend clearly at the time didn't stop me. And I'm sure had a good laugh, right? And then he told the whole bus about it when we got back on this bus because I was running a bus out to Grand Rapids. Had 50 people on the bus who all had a good laugh.
Did anybody get hurt in the process?
No one got hurt.
There you go.
You know, I don't even think I swore. So least I had that going for me. I'm just sure that, like, my facial features made it look apparent that I'd been drinking at a beer festival for 5 hours, right? So today I'm, you know, totally sober and we're having a nice, great conversation with Andy and Jeff here. So Andy, how long have you been part of the Berkeley DDA? And can you kind of talk a little bit about that for me?
No, I signed an NDA.
You signed an NDA for the DDA? I didn't know that was a thing.
No. it's been a little over 3 years.
Okay. And what kind of obviously you have to be a member of the DDA if you're a business in Berkeley on 12 Mile or Coolidge, right? That's part of the gig.
No.
Explain that to me a little bit. So as I'm 1 year into being a Berkeley Chamber member, but I have a home-based business, so I'm not a member of the DDA, kind of always give me that, like, if I didn't know any of this, what's the difference between having a chamber and a DDA?
A chamber is an organization that's meant to promote itself and its business members that it has. The DDA, our mandate is to work our DDA district, which happens to be Coolidge from 11 Mile to 12 Mile, and from 12 Mile all the way up to Greenfield. So we have a large amount of businesses that are in that district, and we just try to promote things that are happening in there. You know, along with wayfinding signs, crosswalks, the road diet, different things, but all again in the DDA district.
And what's your current role then with the DDA, and how do you find that as a business owner, it helps you bring a different perspective as being part of the DDA, as a part of being in this role that you have?
Well, my current role with the DDA is the board chair. I've been that for about a year, maybe a little bit less. As far as perspective on, the DDA, I mean, I think it all starts, with kind of complaining about what's wrong.
Right.
And your significant other looks at you and tells you to, put up or shut up, kind of thing. And I think I was suggested.
Meaning you might as well get involved if you want to help make change. Right? That's correct. The promise.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, complaining to your loved one or a coworker or your partner doesn't change anything.
Eventually, they want you to do something or stop talking to them about it. And that's kind of, I'm married. I understand how that works. I love my wife, but I'm sure she gets sick of me complaining about certain aspects of business at times where she'd say, go do something.
Go talk to a wall.
Right.
Right. I get that all the time. But what you find out once you get involved is that you see, A, how it works. B, you can help move that along. And it is fulfilling. It is satisfying to be able to, you know, help and do things for, you know, the city that you do business in, the city that you own property in. And just to correct you, you don't have to be – To be a recipient of our services, sure, you have to be in the DDA district. If you want to be involved in the DDA, some of our board members are not businesses in the DDA. They are residents of the DDA. I'm sorry, residents of Berkeley. But you don't have to be a business owner in the DDA. You don't have to have property in the DDA. You can be on any of our committees. We've got actually some volunteers that don't even live in the city of Berkeley that work on our team, marketing team, and they just want to volunteer. I think one of them is from Southfield.
It's always interesting to me when I learn things like that. And I'm always like, what made them have that interest in being involved in that way?
Wanting to learn.
Right? So, yeah. We're kind of lifelong learning. I'm 10 years in with my – over 10 years in with my business, and I'm constantly looking for new ways to learn from other people and – get more involved. And part of the appeal of me moving to Berkeley, so I lived in Troy for 10 years, love that community, but it's definitely more suburban in how it's set up. And it doesn't have a central business district, right? It's just the Big Beaver district where there's a lot of, you know, large buildings with a whole bunch of restaurants, basically.
Troy's ginormous.
Yeah, it's a big area. And I never felt like I was part of a community there. And but my original business partner, when I started Motor City Brew Tours with him back in 2009, Brian Turdowski, he lived in Berkeley, and I'd come to his house, and he also owned a couple other homes that he rented out in the area. And I just fell in love with the area for the tighter knit business district and the walkability of it, that appealed to me right away as an area that I wanted to come to and try to become part of a community. And in the last year, as I joined the chamber, it's kind of that same premise. I wanted to meet new people. And yes, I want to benefit my business. That's the point of joining a chamber, isn't it? You network of people and benefit your business. But I also wanted to meet interesting people, right? Like, I want to know the story behind Atomic Dog, and I want to know why I should start with an eye exam and hopefully buy eyewear from Berkeley Eyewear as a part of that. And that's the premise really of our show here, of hopefully throughout the next year, this is what we're going to find. We're going to get more of these stories, and hopefully folks listen to this podcast and get that feeling from it that folks like both of you are getting involved in the community and doing great stuff, that we should all be supporting it. It's really changed my attitude, I have to admit. In an age where all we see is Amazon Prime vans everywhere, right? And we're all, and don't get me wrong, I got an Amazon Prime account. But I have changed my philosophy of certain things I'm buying, right? Now I could tell you that, what did I do yesterday? I went to Ace Hardware. I went to Rite Aid. You know, I went to the post office. I get my haircut locally now, right? I've kind of changed a bunch of that around. My wife like walking up to certain restaurants in the area.
Isn't that nice?
It's a beautiful thing, yeah. Right? Even in the cold. And our joke is, I love Clark's ice cream, and I live off Buckingham, north of 12 Mile. And so I'm kind of a street over and a few blocks away from Clark's ice cream there off 12 Mile. And the first year I was here, I remember we were walking back from the former bar, Patrick J's, and my wife's like, that ice cream place is open. And it's like the dead of winter. It's super cold, icy everywhere.
Rest in peace,
I know. Patrick J's. No doubt, right? No doubt. But Clark's, wow, they're open in the winter. They're open year round. Like, who would have thought that?
They just started doing that a handful of years ago because there was There was a point where I think they closed.
What I would have assumed.
Yeah, even I think the Frosty place on Coolidge even stayed open a little bit later. But I'm always a little surprised when
I am
places
too.
Like that shut down. And my brother-in-law owned Dairy Queens, like up north, and
that's like the total model, isn't it?
Right,
like,
well, but to close your business down 4 months, 5 months out of the year, it's like, really, you still got to pay electric because you got to keep the building.
Yeah,
warm.
You got insurance,
right? You can't do. I mean,
you're kind of letting staff go. Staff might find new jobs potentially.
People want ice cream in the winter.
But it is. That's kind of my point.
Like, I think they do, don't they?
My wife and I would walk back from that bar, and we would get ice cream and then walk back home with said ice cream. I'd have my gloves on, hat on, the whole deal. I don't care. I'm doing it, right? So, again, it's this great appeal of this locally. And then in the summer, I'm biking a little more around the area and I wish I had walked into Atomic Dog sooner the first time. It's funny how, because I live off 12 Mile and not Coolidge, how I lean toward 12-mile businesses a little more at first, and now I'm figuring out there's all this great stuff on Coolidge.
You got to find those hidden gems.
It's so true, isn't
you
it?
Really do.
And there's a lot of them. I mean, Berkeley, again, I think surprises a lot of people when they come down and check it out. I mean, just that big district that goes 12 mile long and Coolidge a mile long. I mean, between restaurants, gift shops, opticals. I mean, we've got a little bit of everything going on.
So let's talk a bit about some of the kind of DDA related events that both your businesses would be part of. The kind of shopping night, the ladies shopping nights, and the other themes, they tie into that. I've now participated in the last so many of those. My wife brings her girlfriends come over, and they all do it. And last couple times I've set up at the chiropractic place, Nova Chiropractic, and then we've done free tastings out of there when folks come in there. And that's been a lot of fun. And it back to what you said, Andy, like I meet people that are out shopping, and a lot of times – as I'm pouring them a sample of something, I'll be like, well, where are you from? And it's amazing. Like 75% of the time, it'll be from a community outside of Berkeley when I ask them that question. And that's neat. That gets me excited that those events draw in people that aren't necessarily living right in this community as a way to expose them differently to there. Do you guys like those events? So you got kind of two different probably perspectives here because one's food and one's a service. Do you find it benefits you being open even if you're not automatically selling a ton of things? Does that make sense if I ask that?
Yeah, it does. It gets the word out more.
Yep.
People see it. We did ladies' night and couples' night, and unfortunately, we didn't get too many patrons coming in for that. You guys had an event over the summer. What was that event in July?
The Berkeley Street Fest.
The Berkley Street Fest. Okay.
Huge for us. We had a beer tent or a beer truck
okay.
in our parking lot.
Who was the beer?
Who was the beer?
What was the beers?
I had Coors. I had
– what was the good beer?
Modelo, Blue Moon, okay. Soft Parade, and okay. M43.
Okay.
Now, that Berkeley Street Art Fest is a great event, and that's a chamber event. The DDA definitely sponsors that, but I can tell you that's I sit on that board and that committee as well.
So a couple years in with that event as a chamber event, and that's been pretty successful. And
third,
then three years.
This is gonna be our, we're already planning our fourth year.
That's pretty exciting.
We were 1 year behind Berkeley Eyewear. In the alleyway there.
Okay, that's what I thought, yeah.
Right, the first year was in that alleyway back in the back between the football field and, you know, the buildings. And we knew we were going to outgrow that after the first year. Our attendance put the petition in to close Coolidge down, which I think a lot of businesses, myself as well, I think thought that Coolidge would never be shut down for any event. And we got it to shut down.
Because traditionally we've done that with 12 Mile, but not with Coolidge. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. You know, I think we all thought maybe – I think the misnomer was that the ambulances and, you know, the traffic between, you know, Beaumont and the expressway, you know, was going to be, you know, an issue. But
– Greenfield.
But when it was done,
so
it,
true.
It was a great event the first year out.
You guys have had some pretty good weather for it. I think the one in 2019 had some pretty nice weather, very warm.
Beautiful day.
Good day to sell beer, that's for sure. What a good idea having a beer truck. You guys were happy with the results you had of that, Jeff?
Yeah, we were. We were. We got the word out more. It could have been planned a little bit more smooth. We were doing wristbands, and then there were some people who wanted to buy beer who only had credit cards, so they would have to go inside. I have
sure.
to follow them in there, make sure they paid, and then come back out and then give them a beer.
Those are all those type of things you learn after you do it.
Yep.
10 years of running events for a living, I could tell you every time I run an event, I go back, I look at that, I go, all right, these two, three things I need to have smoother next time, and then it'll just rock.
Now we got a huge canopy tent to block out the sun, and people okay. were just hanging out in our lot. Once they had a beer, they could only stay in our lot, unfortunately.
Okay. That's the way the laws work.
The laws, we don't want to break laws. We had to go through many hoops to get the permit to sell the beer in our own parking lot. But when it was all said and done, it was pretty successful. We had a very, very successful day.
I do a charity bike event in the spring out in Oakland County and off the Pink Creek Trail, and we go to a cider mill. The cider mill, Pink Creek Cider Mill, which is owned by Oakland Township, and the township owns the building and the property right in there. And it's tied to a nonprofit, and we would hand everyone a can of beer and two donuts when they get there, right?
That's
and
awesome.
It's so simple, isn't it? And people are like, two donuts and beer? I'm like, it works, especially when they're fresh cider donuts. But my point for explaining all this is it's a six-month process to get all that stuff set up that way. The sheriff has to show up and sign off on mm-hmm. the plan. I'm sure you went through the same exact thing. And I think to the average Joe, they don't really know any of that. So they're like, why can't I just walk around everywhere with this can? Or like people would want to buy more beer. And that wasn't the way our license was set up because it was a nonprofit license, a little different than how yours was. And I think people who don't have to organize those things don't realize the steps involved and how you guys start planning really far out to do these great type of events, and they need to be
one
done.
Year.
Yeah.
Right. The day after the event.
It's so true. Like I launched my entire calendar of public tours for 2020. I had the whole year set up by November this year. And what I found is by Thanksgiving, I need to pretty much be rocking for a whole year's worth of commitments because people do it for holiday gifts. And even bikers, I know it's winter and you're thinking, I'm not out there biking. But I've already sold, I don't know, 40 tickets for my spring bike event, for example. And because that's how people kind of plan it out. They're like, okay, that's going to be the weekend I do that, right? And that's the fun thing. And it's no different here with Berkeley and with all the great events that DDA and the Berkeley Chamber are both involved in. So, Andy, let's talk about the competition side of it for a bit here with your business. As a great local business, you know, there's obviously lots of chains that do eye care, eye exams, and all the like. What really sets you guys apart from that?
I think what sets us apart is experience. There's, you know, 40 years worth of experience, you know, sitting behind those walls. We're not salespeople. We're not having you walk in and trying to hard sell you or push you into buying something. I think we kind of leave it from an experience standpoint. And, you know, we want every customer that comes in to see the best they can see. And sometimes that's different, you know, for every single person. So, you know, we take the time to figure out, you know, what you're doing, what your problem is. I mean, you know, the eye exam's that first step, sure. But once you come out of there, there's so many different designs of lenses and styles of frames. I mean, you know, computer lenses, you know, workspace lenses, single vision lenses just for your distance. So whatever your problem is, whatever you're struggling with, you know, you listen a little bit and then you start making recommendations. So
it's why we should all shop local, is that we can get that type of expertise and that more
sometimes
hands-on
wonder,
approach.
Yeah. Well, sometimes I wonder, you know, when you walk into that Pearle Vision or that big box store or, you know, when that sales or when that optician or salesperson, you know, is on commission, you know, are they really thinking about what's best for Steve? You know, Steve's struggling at the computer and, you know, very
I am.
You know, well, you know, when we start to get a little bit older, you know, we start to struggle with certain things. The computer is definitely one of the, you know, the most common talked about troubled area, you know, whether you're a single vision or whether you're, you know, a bifocal or progressive where that reading portion is.
Thank you for explaining that to me.
typically, as we get over 40, you know, okay, we start to have a hard time reading that that smaller print.
I can barely see it now. I'm the one who wrote it, so.
Okay. If you're not seeing that very well, you need glasses.
Right? Clearly. Okay. My whole family has glasses. The fact that I'm getting closer to 5-0 and don't yet is probably amazing or a problem. I'm not sure which.
I wanted glasses. Right? My dad was an optometrist, and my dad had an exam room in the basement. And family, if they wanted, you know, to get their eyes checked and buy glasses, it was cool. If they wanted to pay full price, they came to the store. If they wanted it discounted or free, they came to the house. I always wanted my eyes checked because I wanted glasses. My whole family wore glasses. Wearing glasses for me was last 5, 6, 7 year phenomenon.
Okay.
But I got over 40 and seeing the print is, you know, hard when you're struggling and you're trying to read that computer and, you know, you're closing one eye or squinting.
I feel like for me, it's been the last couple of years I felt more like that. And I'm sure it's all because of the screens, right? We're all addicted to screens, and that only bodes well better for your business, honestly, doesn't it?
Oh, it does. I mean, the eyewear sunglass industry is a $60+ billion industry. The lens industry has definitely examined and responded to the whole blue light, which is the light, the light source, the rays that come off of all the screens that we use, whether we're, you know, handheld phones or laptops or, you know, desktops, TV screens. They've accounted for these things. A whole industry has directed, you know, their technology to help aid and, assist you in reading that computer that everyone seems to struggle at.
So, Jeff, not totally on that note, but in terms of like changes in industry, the food industry and more importantly, the Grubhub side of the world and Uber Eats, do you guys participate in any of that juncture?
We use Uber Eats right now.
Okay. And without like calling out Uber Eats or anything, has that helped your business, hurted your business? What do you guys think of it?
It's staying neutral.
Okay.
Some weeks we'll get 5 or 6, 10 orders, and then some weeks we'll get none. It all just depends on the consumer. I personally like those services because I'm lazy, and if I'm home,
it's a lazy person service to some degree. Right?
Yeah. If I don't eat fast food,
you're agreeing with that. You're agreeing with that, Andy.
Oh God, there was a time. 5 nights a week Grubhub. I mean,
wow. Oh, okay.
I just hated to cook, you know.
Okay.
That's
another, besides our eyes all going bad, that's an obvious trend. I don't see where that part of the world, where that part of the industry is going away anytime
soon. It's here to stay.
No way. Yeah.
It is here to stay.
For the last two years, I've done a sideline gig where occasionally I work as a Shipt shopper. You guys familiar with Shipt?
I am.
Shipt is the company that Target bought. But they work with Meijer and Target in this market where I'm just a freelancer, just like an Uber driver would be. And I go to a Meijer store or a Target store, and I shop this order that a customer has placed and deliver it to their house. Yeah. So instead of just going to the restaurant, your restaurant, to pick up food, I would pick it up at Meijer, have a credit card that I pay for, and do all that. It's interesting seeing the wide range of people that helps or utilize services like that, that Uber Eats falls right into that, and Grubhub and DoorDash and kind of all those fall into that same
general area. He's
right. It's
about being lazy.
Yeah, it's like I said before, it's a blessing and it's a burden.
Sure.
It really is kind of destroying humanity with the laziness, and it's also helping people.
So from a business standpoint, from a strategy standpoint, as a restaurant though, you guys need to kind of know where you stand on that, because you're going to have customers coming in asking you about it. What was that? What got you guys to start using Uber Eats?
Yes.
Was that customers were coming going, hey, is this an option for us? Can we do this with you?
Yes. As the new millennia has taken place, technology and people just want to people want convenience, and they wanted us to be a part of that. They like our food so much. And finally, I said, all right, let's try it. We were going to try a different one, and then I started using Uber Eats, and I liked it. So that's what we started with, and that's what we're using right now.
I think over the next, say, 5 years, I think we'll see how all these players kind of shake out, since we have three, almost four players in the market that are all kind of doing similar things. I guess we'll have to see if it's Uber Eats, DoorDash, whoever, Postmates, Grubhub, right? We'll have to kind of see how they all play out.
What is Postmates?
Postmates is another thing similar to that. They're just not prominent in this market.
I don't think you're going to ever see Berkley Eyewear on any of them.
You don't think so?
Yeah, you know, somehow I just find it hard to believe that we're going to deliver sunglasses that way.
You don't think so?
You can do, like, if somebody's glasses are broken, ship them to you through a courier.
Eh? True, I guess. You know,
are there other aspects of technology, though, that have really changed your business or your industry, for that matter, Andy? I guess staying on that note.
I like his Amazon Alexa. Whenever I go in this restaurant in the store, I always say, Alexa, play this, and I leave.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. I'm going to do that next time I go into Berkley, Iowa.
I mean, I never said anything.
Since you haven't had your eyes examined, anyone had their eyes examined in the last year?
I'm 2 years out, so I'm due, and that's okay. Partially why I was asking some of those questions.
Remember the puff, the glaucoma test, where they puff your eye with the air?
Yeah.
We don't do the puff anymore.
Ah.
What do you guys do for glaucoma?
We scan your eye.
Interesting. So it's digital scanning?
It's a handheld device that, yeah. But so technology has definitely changed our industry. I mean, not only the computer, you know, I mean, the way we order. And I mean, when somebody orders, you know, lenses, we're putting a prescription into a software, and it's sending it to the lab, and the lab's marrying that up with a frame later on. And
where there was a time when you probably called in things like that.
Yeah, we can still do it. Lisa likes to do things old school sometimes. So yeah, there's still a lot of paper and stuff, but technology is definitely on the medical side. Technology is definitely, come in. So there's nothing evasive about an eye exam anymore. No puff of air in the eye. So everything is just looking, you know, there's nothing to be apprehensive about. So anybody who's definitely thought about an eye exam or is putting it off because they don't like that puff of air. So
I think this is everybody's homework assignment that's on a computer right now or staring at a phone or a screen, is that they need to go to Berkley Eyewear and get an eye exam. And then to celebrate that they did something they should be doing, they should literally go across the street to Atomic Dog and get something to eat. Or if they go on open mic night, get entertained, right? So I want to thank you guys both for coming on the Berkley Local Podcast today, episode 3, right? If people want to get more information about Berkley Eyewear, where should they go?
www.berkleyeyewear.com.
By the way, you don't need to say www anymore, so don't sound as old when you say it. So berkleyeyewear.com. And Jeff, if they want to get more information about Atomic Dog, what should they do?
They can go on our Facebook page, Atomic Dog, D-A-W-G.
D-A-W-G.
Or they can go to www.berkleyeyewear.com.
Well, Jeff and Andy, I want to thank you both for coming on the show. Stay tuned for more of these shows coming out monthly, where we'll have two great local businesses in the Berkley area. And I'm your host, Steve Johnson. If you want to learn more about my business, MotorCityBrewTours.com, that's where you go for that. If you want to get more of these episodes of the Berkley Local Podcast, please go to the BerkleyChamber.com website or the socials, where we're going to obviously share this for both of these businesses, and the Downtown Berkley Facebook account, where we'll have links to this as well. So I want to thank everybody for coming on. I want to thank the DDA for sponsoring the show and the Chamber for allowing me to help produce it. And stay tuned to next month when we'll have two more great businesses on. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.